At this point in time, I'm handing over to you, Honorable because we changed more than 700 times the resolution. The safety advisor has been there every morning, better time, all time, to be able to indicate what the next amendment is favorable. The bill that we are treating is the longest of the bill, as the chairperson has indicated. It is by the intel to the creation of an administration decision to special public and administration and in all this mechanism, then has a different on the shelf of Parliament, because in it we have been able to mature in our thinking. What it is that we want, as we have been challenged, and as we have been challenging society, and so we're talking these things, and we ourselves have been shown. So we've been thinking through now our priorities, and then by the end of this bill, we are quite certain that we know exactly where we should have been, and where we should be, and where we're going. And we see that right now, perhaps, all the mishaps in the world, perhaps this is the right time for the bill to be discussed. Because we are able to have the safety of the administration. And all the managers of the civil, we are able to agree with that and see what is happening along with the safety should be. And we are here to take it. And we are certain that the bill should be affecting all the issues that have been identified in failure by the various entities and governments. Comes at a time when we have seen of some of our municipalities and some of our provinces and have time to work on exactly what is on what's our difference. It also comes at a time when we have diagnosed and looked at the office of the commission and the public document. Is actually a new path for a more efficient state machinery. The elements of this bill are to be found in the public service charter and was distributed to Parliament, which is already been signed and published between our health and labor. It has most comprehensively crossed the bill and has been through the most rigorous examination by all. Identified as an absolute necessity of far better 2002 by the administration. Because, as you would know, the first two layers of government, the national and provincial government, got off to a better start than the municipal level of government. The municipal level of government only consolidated long after the year for a head start. And having had a head start, it meant that we were able to get in the intensive meeting. having had a head start, we were able to cream, to take the cream off the public service that we had, the resources that were available to the state. And unfortunately, by the time that the municipal level was put in place, we were able to start on the head to contend with on what we were going to do. So we realized by 2002 that we had something to ensure that we can ensure an equitable share of both the human capital and profit that government has in the financial system, all three spheres of government, so that our people, especially the people of the state, can benefit from what government is doing. By 2005, the DKSA began work on the bill. By 2007, after extensive trials, such as from 2007 to 2008, the bill was passed. Parliament at that time, because for many of you know, the government was everywhere in the single public service bill, and the FILMA that we immediately had wanted to ensure we corrected. In 2008, November, the minister felt that perhaps there had not been extensive consultation with the new minister by this time, and he said that perhaps we needed more consultation, and that some permission for Parliament to be brought there to continue consultation. Parliament graciously agreed that the bill be withdrawn. The bill then gathered dust 2008, 2009, 2010, 2011. July 2012, it became quite clear from the central bill that I take up and revive and ensure that it is put back on the shelf. Together with the deputy president, unfortunately, I think we were caught up in other really essential matters of running government, and this never did happen. But by the time people are settled in their way, and you come in and you try to build a highway, and there are already cattle there, you can imagine the kind of rethinking that needs to be taken into account for people to understand that actually the highway is essential for us, the kind of environment that we need to have and drive out of. So it didn't take us a long time. It took us a long time in consultation in NEDLAC. We took it to January in NEDLAC, and it already returned from NEDLAC in September in the correct album. And we allowed NEDLAC purposes to take their time because we knew that it was absolutely important that everybody is in capacity. We can therefore show the team here, members of parliament, that the consultation has been. Most importantly, we'll be able to learn along the way ourselves. Most importantly, too, we'll be able to educate society about what needs to be done, about what is wrong with public administration. The challenges that we seek to address very quickly are to build a framework of legislation of a seamless public administration in line with the values and principles of our constitution. Over and over, come to you and indicate to you what is wrong with the public service and what needs to be done about the public service. Address issues that have been raised by HSRC and other state entities and the problems in public space. Continuously, we are asking ourselves what are we doing in regards to the system. It responds to the NDC that has mentioned before, which is very essential to the state. Finally, when the NDC itself was put together, the most comprehensive way, all in agreement, we might have a few views about the number of areas within our various stakeholders about the NDC. One thing we're all in agreement is that that area that deals with the state is very comprehensive in the NDC. And needs to be given all the necessary support to ensure that we can meet. So we therefore have offered ourselves as that engine that we drive the NDT to ensure that the foundation of the NDT is as solid as possible. Over the past year, certainly I've understood the problem. Very difficult to live without system. This really is fun, doesn't we are aligning government with the challenges pointed out by all of the state entities that have identified from ourselves. We ensure that the government is streamlined, we can streamline set of our values without all the fears of government. We take on board concerns raised particularly by members of the parliament here, and we have in our package of members of parliament. Every question that you have asked in the 5 years, every question that you have raised in the budget vote, we have recorded it and we are answering it in the bill. So all those questions that you are concerned about are answered. If they're not answered, then perhaps you will ask the wrong question. So those questions that have anything to do with public administration that you are concerned about, we've taken complete notes of them and we've recorded them and we've gone to them and taken every clause in the bill. Here we're answering on the only to do with public service, to do with anything else that is happening. So we've been able to take and when we're done with this process, we can actually take back questions that we've been answering to the big concerns about and how we are just we've taken on board the issues that have been raised by the chairperson. What we call a quiet system. No one knows that. This can't happen. This has been happening for a long time. We can't have this. We have been up here. No, and this chairperson. We are not happy with what Mr. Hart has, and you are more than quiet. We also take into account that the Constitution requires secretiveness in the institutional system. Especially in spaces that we are addressing the plight of those who have been the most marginalized in our society. And this is at this point, we give you a run-through of those comments, and I will not go into detail, but just a little bit of what the public service has been saying and what the documents have been say public service details need to have information from performance management. Now, performance management is essential to me that it indicates to us whether or not our managers are performing in line with what is expected of them. Now, this is just for the level of national government and provincial government. We're not sure if it is just for the level of state. So at all times where we have tried to find solutions to our problems, we have largely been concentrating on national and provincial, those which are already, you know, which have their fair share of the government. And we continue to be, as a country, within the sphere of government, the developed sphere of government in the world, and the underdeveloped sphere of government in the world. This, in our case, is the sphere of government. The public service commission has been concerned about accountability and especially around financial management, and you will see how we're solving that problem with our people to improve human resource management, you will see how we're involving that, and they've been concerned about reaching out corruption and what administration we see in the film, how we are addressing that, and how we are also the issue of making sure that public servants do not do this with government. We are also wanting to ensure the number of
Indicating to you that the departure point is chapter 10 of the Constitution. And I think you've gone through this long enough to know that what it gives you are the values and principles that should inform public administration. The first point of call is to be reminded that had the Constitution come immediately after the negotiations and elections, we would have had this bill before the public. The Public Service Act is a 1994 legislation because as part of the immediate movement into the new democratic dispensation, there had to be a way of managing the public service. And the public service was always defined as national government and provincial government only. So whenever you talk about the public service, you are not referring to local government. You are only referring to provincial government and national. So with the advent of the democratic dispensation, focus immediately was on how to run the country and how to run province. At the same time, negotiations on the constitution continued to reflect fully the future of this country was going to be. Hence, when it gets captured properly in the preamble, it goes on to be captured in respect of public administration in Chapter 10. So Chapter 10 is intended, as it always been intended by the founding fathers and mothers of this constitution, to refer to the three spheres of government, all forms of government, national, provincial, and local government. So this is what we have started with. So what we are now doing is we are beginning to run government at all levels in accordance with the Constitution. In other words, we are now ensuring that the values and principles in Chapter 10 of the Constitution equally apply to all spheres of government, local government included, because that's what the founders of the Constitution wanted. And that is not what we are currently doing as government. We are not doing that. We may believe that we are, but we are not. So we are doing that now, and we are providing for this legislation. So, what are these values and principles? They are listed there. What is important about these values and principles is that they must be given expression to. They must be given expression to in a variety of ways. All the government programs at all levels, all the projects that get run, is one way of attempting to give expression to something. We call it generally service delivery and support and service. But what this bill then does is that it locates that directly to the Constitution. And it tells us what should primarily be focused on in each of the projects that get done. This bill does so in the context of public administration. PADGE, for example, Promotion of Administrative Justice Act, does the same thing, but in the context of the promotion of administrative justice. So in other words, ensuring that public administration is accountable in the area of administrative justice. What legislation, what national legislation gives expression to these values in PADGE? So every piece of national legislation that gets passed seeks to give expression to these values. What the PEM bill does is giving expression to those values in public administration. In public administration, how we should run government. So, the above principles apply to everyone. Administration in every sphere of government. That's an instruction from the Constitution, not from public service administration. The Constitution requires that it happens in every sphere of government. It's currently not happening because we're not included as we ought to have, as the Constitution always intended to have done in local government. We are trying to make sure that the three spheres are equally tied together and are bound by the same rules, same principles, same norms and standards. It also then provides that it applies to organs of state, that includes the judiciary, also bound by the same principles and values. That's why it must also be equally accountable. They must be fair and equitable and so forth. Equally public enterprises, all SOEs, all public enterprises, they're equally bound by the same. So what the founders of the Constitution wanted is everybody to be bound by the same rules and principles. And then tells us that it is national legislation that must ensure the promotion of those values and principles. The PEM bill is exactly that national legislation that is successful. In the context of promotion of administrative justice, PADGE is that national legislation that must ensure the promotion of those values. So what PEM bill does, it does not restructure government. It does not restructure government at all. Local government, provincial government, and national government remain exactly as they are. However, in the performance of their work, in whatever they do, they must ensure that these values are encapsulated in whatever they do. So there's no opt-out of the Constitution. There's no opt-out. So by not properly capturing all spheres of government together in a way that this bill is trying to do now, indirectly, local government has opted out, not by its own creation, but that's the way in which national legislation has not yet come into being. Now we're seeking to ensure that this applies. So there are no exceptions. In respect of the promise that the people of this country were given by the elected representatives, I won't read it to you, but I want to get an opportunity when you can, please, to go to the preamble, because what the preamble, amongst other things, is that through this constitution, what we want for the people of this country is to improve the quality of life of everyone. We want to free the potential of each person. We're laying a foundation for a democratic and open society in which government is based on the will of the people. And every citizen is equally protected. So that promise that is made there, again, is being given expression to in various pieces of legislation. In public administration, we are seeking to do that. Now, the error that occurred in the Public Service Act, as I've indicated, was the exclusion of local government. In other words, it was intended that the public service only be provincial and local government. But that doesn't comply with the Constitution, because public administration, as we have now seen and we know, is all three spheres of government to us. So that's being correct. I want to go back to this slide 12 and those values and principles and show you how the values and principles are being given effect to this field. By way of example, if you look at Part B, efficient economic and effective use of resources must be promoted. Section 14 of the bill seeks to do that. It talks about use of information and communication technologies in public administration. And when it seeks to do that, it encourages, as a value principle, it encourages use of information technology, because we all know, as you are typing through your computers now yourself, that ICT improves delivery of services. It's quite efficient, quick. So what this bill does, it seeks to ensure that every HOD, every DG, every single person from the top to the bottom in public administration makes use as much as possible of information technology. So they must go out of their way to promote the use of information technology, because that is an efficient and economic way, an effective way of using the resources of government. And this must happen at all levels. It must happen at all levels. Section 14 does that. Section 16 does that by providing for norms and standards. Value and principle in the public administration must be development oriented. We know exactly what that means. We know where we come from. We need to capacitate all the people of this country and ensure that they are able to realize their fullest potential. Section 10, 11, 12, and 13 seek to do that. Section 10 talks about capacity development by the National School of Government that has been launched. So when President opens it in December, what he will be doing, he will be giving expression to Section 195.1 of the Constitution. He'll be giving expression to Section 10 by saying he is a school of government whose ultimate purpose is to ensure that human capacity, human potential is realized through the programs that the school will offer. Section 10 does that. Section 11 does that. The directive of the minister will issue to it. Naturally, we have to provide for consultation. The minister will conduct with the relevant ministers in that regard. I need you to look at Section 13. So Section 13 again gives expression to these values and principles by providing for their consultation process. If seven that will prove those programs that are over there, the minister will put them in place after approval by seven. It says, in part two, in respect of local government, because local government is independent, we know what Chapter 5 of the Constitution says, the minister must conduct, organize local government, and obtain the concurrence of the minister for costs before those directives are issued. Again, putting expression to these values, because there must be consultation, there must be engagement with all stakeholders, the public must be informed, the public must be able to respond to what is proposed to be done. What the bill does not do, it does not take the responsibility of provincial government, it does not take responsibility of local government in respect of their constitutional responsibilities. All it does is that it gives an indication of what minimum must be done to ensure compliance with the Constitution, which is those values and principles. Public administration must be accountable. Value and principle F. Section 15, 16, and 17 ensures the public accountability. The institutes of the unit that is being created there, the Office of Standards and Compliance that is being created in Section 17, the minimum norms and standards that are being provided for, are a direct reflection and expression of those values and principles. Again, all that is being done, what I'm demonstrating to honorable members is that all that is being done through the PEN bill is complying with the Constitution by providing that national legislation that gives expression to these values and principles. That is how we promote them. So we are really complying with the Constitution as we ought to have done in 1994. But because we're finalizing the Constitution, that process got delayed, and this is where we are. And there were other intervening engagements in the process of consultation. So we consulted that extensively as the representatives of the people since then. In the meantime, we've been working on compromise position by using the public space. That has been the way of improvising. We are now not improvising. We are putting the law as it ought to have been de novo. And it depends on your system to do. So that is the context that we hope assist honorable members to look at the bill. That is the vantage point from which you should approach the bill, in that this is a corrective action to respond to what the minister has indicated of it. Is what the people of this country have been demanding, what as the elected representatives of the people and on behalf of those people we have been demanding, that is to say, government at all levels must respond to the needs of the people, so that we are able to live up to the promise that was made in the Constitution, starting from the preamble and then in each one of those clauses. That is all that the PM does. It takes no powers away from people, but it complements, it assists, it ensures compliance with the Constitution. It's the least that can be done at this particular point in time. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Advocate Mezi. We're now going to give Abu Perla to give you a brief overview of the consultation that has been undertaken for us to come to the bill as it is. And when we have done that, we give Abu to take it through. The highlights of the elements of the bill, so that by the time we get to questions, we have a comprehensive and understanding of what the purpose is, what we need to achieve, what we've been doing in and out of the day that is being paid by government. Alvin?
Thank you, honorable members, Minister. The consultation process, and as Minister indicated, was very extensive. Immediately the Minister came in and said, we are taking this thing forward, that's it, and we start the process. We actually established a multidisciplinary team that included the Department of Labor, we included SALGA, we included COGTA, and ourselves. And that a team went tirelessly to look into that bill that was withdrawn in 2008 and developed that which was presented in the cabinet, which approved it to be published on 31st of May for closure on 28th June 2013. The minister has also already indicated that after that, we received the request for the extension of that, which we truly did. We received submissions from the Minister of Finance, the Minister of Performance Monitoring and Evaluation, the Minister of Cooperative Governance, and we actually, after receiving that, had to sit with them and went through the areas that they placed on the published bill. And from the published bill, we received 27 written submissions. Numerous individuals made submissions via email, some SMS, and there were written submissions that came from government departments, National Treasury, that in addition to what we received from the Minister of Finance, Department of Higher Education, the Department of International Relations and Cooperation, Department of Performance Monitoring, again, it follow up in terms of what we got. And from provinces, the Office of the Premier, KwaZulu-Natal, the Western Cape Premier, Mayor of Cape Town, and we also got from the DG, from the department itself, a submission that came from the department, and there were also a submission that came from and it then embarked on consultation, going to each one of those departments to make presentations. And the list is presented there. We did home affairs. We went to provinces, Limpopo, Free State, Northwest, Eastern Cape, Mpumalanga, Northern Cape, Gauteng, and we also made presentations to the NRG Council, the Auditor General of South Africa, and we had a workshop, a full-day workshop with them to deal with the issues. with the minister has already undertaken. We had interaction with the commissioners from the Public Service Commission. We also had discussions with the PCTA, even medical team, our exams. We also had interaction with them. In Western Cape, there was what we call the mini-mac of the Western Cape, which included the Premier and the MCs and the executive council in the city of Cape Town. And we also interacted with the National Development Commission and the Joburg Metro. Further written submissions were received from Etekwe Municipality, Emalahle Local Municipality, the city of Cape Town, which was a follow-up on the workshop that we had with Mosselbaai Municipality. And we organized the labor, extensive interaction. We had several meetings with IMATU, I think three, four times with IMATU, with the producer, with COSATU. It was also three or four meetings that took place, and with Maposa, with SAMU, they actually submitted a written presentation. And all the other union-organized data, they also was interaction, but there was also written submissions that we had. Then we had a three-day workshop with legal experts. Legal experts from externally and internal in the public service. And we also had workshops with legal advisors of ministers to ensure that we are not leaving anything out that will actually compromise the bill that we're introducing. We received submissions from organizations like Corrupt Watch, Corruption Watch, Public Service Accountability Monitor, the National Steering Committee of Municipal Managers, where we made presentation but also made written submission, the Cape Chamber of Commerce, Public Servants Association, and the Municipal Retirement Organization. The National Labor Relations Forum in the Public Service made a presentation to them, and we also involved the community development workers, where we spent a day workshopping them on this bill. And we also had a workshop which we presented to the major municipalities forum. Further to that, the Umalang Provincial House of Traditional Leaders said we don't want to be left out, and we made presentation to them. And the NEDLEC consultation, I just want to give a little story about the NEDLEC process. We submitted the bill in January to them and said we want to deal with this issue as part of that process of consulting before we can go on the publishing the bill for public comment. They came to us and said, okay, we can start the process in March. In that discussion, at some point they said, no, we don't even want to consider this bill is unconstitutional. We said, no. Now tell us which line is unconstitutional. So we took some time to bring the NEDLEC process into discussion, and we had extensive discussion on it until we went to cabinet on the 18th of September. And then the outcome of that cabinet discussion, we referred it back to NEDLEC. And they engaged on that. And what we presented to cabinet included the input that they gave us. And we finally, on the 25th, had a consensus report that has been developed with areas of disagreement in terms of bill. But most of the issues that in the report were areas of disagreement, even adjusted with the second cabinet process. Some of the issues in the report that they submitted to Parliament, you find that it has also been incorporated in the bill that is before. Following all the submissions that we got, we actually revised the bill and it reflected the public comment that we received. And later on, after I will have taken us through the content of the bill, I will indicate what are those major areas that were taken out in consideration of comments that we received. Therefore, I want to assure you that the bill, therefore, is the net outcome of the product of that consultation. We had a bill that had plus minus 135 pages. Now, what you have in front of you is a bill which is 17 pages. On the public side, Mr. had breakfast with Christ Canary Association. In her MPSA budget book speech, she spoke about the changes that need to come for public administration to be capable to deliver. The Tshwane branch of the Lake Management Forum, the engagement with them, breakfast with academics, the TNA business breakfast post the budget vote, these issues were canvassed and we got input from that process. And at the launch of the service charter, this issue also came in terms of the forms that were bringing through the bill. And the minister also addressed the Northern Eastern Conference. And also at the launch of the National School of Government, it was actually now starting to make that the bill that we're presenting practical. Although we are launching it in terms of the Public Service Act, and when the bill comes into effect, it will be aligned with the bill. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Alvin.
Mr.
Just saying
it
is very much of consultation that is undertaken, bringing this to attention so that you are in no doubt. The public has been responding, we've given the public enough space to respond, and we have responded in turn in relation to the bill and taken on board some of the amendments that have been brought forward. Our intention, our approach in relation to the bill was one that indicated we need to have a framework bill. If there is any area that any entity or group of people are unhappy with, our approach has always been to withdraw that part. As long as it does not interfere with the central, adherence to the institution, we were very willing to withdraw that. So by the end of the consultation, we started off with 151 pages, we're now down to 17. This is how far back we have bent to make sure that we have accommodated everybody who come forward to say this is our concern. The bill as we have it now is a slim 70 pages that is really directed to the essence of what we want to be a framework legislation for the public protest. And chairperson, even if I have to say it myself, it's a very good bill. It's a concept of good bill. I will now allow Andre to say that to the concept of good bill.
Thank you, Mr. Deputy Minister. Chairperson and honorable members of the committee, good morning, and everybody who is present in the room. As indicated by the Minister, I'm only going to deal with now the content of the bill. The Minister has already given us background in terms of where it comes from. Milana also indicated in terms of the conceptualization, constitutionally, of what this bill is all about. The rapper has indicated to us the journey that this bill has traveled ever since work on drafting of the bill began. So as part of dealing with the content of the bill, we thought it would be very important to identify specific definitions in the bill. So I'm saying this to indicate that there are definitions in the bill that we specifically chose to highlight those that are reflected in the definition. And the first definition is the definition of employee. First, that an employee is a person appointed in the public administration, and I think now members should align phrase public administration. But also the person appointed as a special advisor in the Act, and the person performing similar functions in the employee. The other definition that itself is important is the definition of an assembly member, and this is in relation to section 9 of the bill that deals with the disclosure of financial information. And the definition is in relation to any person to meet his or her parents, sister, brother, child, spouse, but a thing including a person living with that person as if they were married to each other, namely, or life partner. B, whether such relationship results from death, marriage, or adoption. Paragraph C, including any other relative who resides presently with the member. And D, including any other relative who is of necessity dependent on such person. And as I indicated, this definition is very important specifically for the purpose of searching or clause 9 that deals with disclosure of financial information. Other important definition is the definition of institution. As Melana indicated when he was reading as the contextual constitutional imperative of the bill, that the public service, as you know, is only confined to the public service, to the national and provincial departments. What the constitution had intended was to have all those relevant principles enjoined and to apply and applicable to all spheres of government. So for the purposes of this bill, institution would mean a national department, a provincial department, a municipality, or a national or provincial government component. And I'll also highlight the issue of institution when we deal with class 4, which relates to the scope of the bill. And last days I indicated to members that for the purpose of the definition of the employee, let's analyze the phrase public administration. Public administration, instead of this bill, means the public service of its national and provincial departments. The public administration also means municipalities and their employees. I'm going to highlight as we deal with class 2, relating to the scope of the bill, the importance of this definition of public administration. Then the second slide, which is slide 26 in your pack, then deals with the application of the bill. Who does this bill talk to? The bill applies to the public administration. And as we know, public administration means national and provincial departments, as well as municipalities and their employees. But the second sentence is also very important to highlight as a phrase that comes directly from the Constitution. Section 195(2) of the Constitution provides that the principles governing public administration apply to any administration in every sphere of government, which is what the bill talks about, and then B, organ of state, and C, public enterprise. And again, this is the area that as Melanie highlighted in terms of what the Constitution intended with regard to whom these relevant principles should be applicable. And as it again indicated, the focus of the bill in terms of the relevant principles in Section 195 of the purpose of this bill is only confined to the administration in every sphere of government. Then with regard to the key areas of the bill, but I should also highlight what you find in clause 4 of the bill. And this is the area where Melanie did indicate that between now you locate the grades and principles in terms of who should do what. And what you find in clause 4 is that it starts by saying each institution must promote, and then it lists all the areas, including the values that are set out in section 195(1) of the Constitution. It's important to highlight that in terms of each institution, it means every institution in the administration is now enjoined to ensure that in whatever business you are involved in, you have to take into account and ensure that you adhere and to the principles and values that are set out in Section 15 of the Constitution. Then the slide that is reflected on the screen there, it basically deals with issues around mobility of staff. And this has been an outcry across the previous years. That because of this different legislation, which is the Municipal Systems Act for local government and the Public Service Act for national and provincial departments, we don't have a legal framework that allows mobility of staff across the three spheres. And it was felt that it's important then to make it provide for such mechanisms in terms of the bill that would allow the movement of personnel across the three spheres, be it transferring from the national department to a provincial department, of the national department to a municipality and vice versa. So what clause 5 up to 7 do respectively is that what you find in clause 5 is the regulation of transfers of personnel across the three spheres, and then what you find in clause 6 is the secondment of personnel across the three spheres, and clause 7 deal with the transfer of employees when there is a transfer or an assignment of a function from one institution to the other. But what is very important to highlight with regard to the transfer of employees is that this bill only allows for the transfer of employees with their consent. It's no longer a provision that a provision to transfer employees without their consent. But when it comes to secondments, the bill allows for secondments to be done either with consent of the employee or without the consent of the employee. And it's for the reason that secondment, by its very nature, it's supposed to be a temporary measure, and it's also based on the need of the skills that you require for a particular project or particular function. Then another very important area in what we find under clause 8, clause 8 and 9, which deal with the prohibition from conducting business in the state, as well as the disclosure of financial income. As part of promoting personal ethics and integrity by employees, the bill prohibits employees from conducting business with the state or being a director of a public or private company that does or conducts business with the state. That is what we find in clause 8 of the bill. And what is also very important is that the bill says that if an employee fails to comply with the prohibition, that would constitute serious misconduct, which may result in the termination of the employment. And again, I must highlight that for the purposes of clauses 8 and 9, we have a special definition of employee. And you would see that the definition of employee for purposes of clauses 8 and 9 does include special advisors or persons performing similar functions in his function. And you should read that definition specifically for the purposes of prohibition to conduct business with the state, as well as the disclosure of financial interest. Then furthermore, in terms of clause 9, employees are required to disclose their financial interest and the financial interest of their friends and persons living with them as if they were married to each other. Hence the definition of family member, and I indicated that the definition of family member, where we highlighted in that slide, is because it is very important to understand it in the context of section or clause 9. And again, failure to comply with the obligation in terms of clause 9 requires every employee to disclose the financial interest, which also constitutes misconduct.
By the way, living with them as though they were married is a general term.
Yes,
if you have a more specific interest, we can't give a little more specific comment.
Thank you.
The slide deals with capacity development and training. And again, this talks to one of the things that Advocate Milani indicated in this presentation. And what the bill does is seek to promote capacity development of employees by providing for the establishment of the National School of Government, which the minister launched very recently. And what the bill says is that the school, this is now the National School of Government. It must, through education and training, promote the realization of values and principles governing public administration. And this is what now again talking to Section 195 of the Constitution. And also enhance quality, extent and impact of development of human resource capacity in institutions. And when you talk of institutions, it's national, provincial, national departments, provincial departments, as well as municipalities. But the bill also requires the head of each institution, that is the head of a national department, the head of a provincial department, prime municipal manager for that matter. It requires each head to, through education and training of each employee, develop human resource capacity in their institutions to the level that enables the institution to perform its function in an efficient, quality, collaborative, and accountable manner. And we, for obvious reasons, don't go into the details of how the school can be, would be established. But I think it's school was launched. And it means the revision. Then another area that talks to the values, and again, in the presentation by Advocate Milani, there were examples used of how the bill talks to the values and principles that the Constitution in terms of Section 195 requires the public administration to have. This supporting deals with the use of information and communication technologies in the public administration. And it requires the head of an institution to acquire and use ICT in a manner which firstly leverages the economies of scale to provide cost-effective service and also ensure the interoperability of its information systems with information systems of other institutions to enhance internal efficiency of its delivery.
we would all know that in government, most institutions, when it comes to ICT, they use different systems to achieve a particular goal. In some areas, it's trying to achieve a similar goal. And because the systems don't talk to one another, then it doesn't allow for this seamless public administration that we asked for them to try to have. So what the bill now requires is that each head of institution, whenever they deal with ICT, to ensure that there is interoperability of systems. And furthermore, we must also ensure that we eliminate unnecessary duplication of ICT in the administration and ensure security of its information systems. Then the area of ethics and integrity, we find that standard was 15. And for those that we have seen, the 10 bills that was published, there was also a clause of clauses that dealt with the area, even though the heading was different. So under clause 15, the bill allows for when building a public administration, it should be grounded by professional ethics, integrity, and discipline. And this is critical for the realization of values that are contained in section 195 of the Constitution. If you don't have a public administration that is grounded on professional ethics, integrity, and discipline, the chances of achieving what is required in terms of section 195, which is that the values and principles that are contained there, is almost next to nothing. So the bill, in terms of trying to achieve that, it allows for the establishment of a public administration ethics, integrity, and disciplinary technical assistance unit that will provide, amongst others, technical assistance and support to institutions in all spheres of government regarding the management of ethics, integrity, and disciplinary matters relating to misconduct within the public administration. And the bill requires that the minister must report to Parliament 5 years on activities of this unit. I know it is only one slide, but there is so much in this slide in terms of the impact of what is required in Clause 16 when it comes to the public administration. Clause 16 deals with minimum non-system. And what the bill seeks to do is to empower the minister to prescribe minimum non-standards. Firstly, the promotion of values and principles referred to in section 151 of the Constitution. And as you know, those values, where they are listed, they go up to 8 or I. And then it also empowers the minister to prescribe minimum non-standards with regard to capacity development and training. And also non-standards on information and communication technology in the public administration, and non-standards in integrity, ethics, discipline, including the disclosure of financial interest, and also on measures to improve effectiveness and efficiency of institutions, and also in relation to the disclosure of disciplinary action and any other matter which is necessary to give effect to administration or implementation of the bill. And how the minister would prescribe this normative standard, it would be through regulations. That's why if you look at the definition of prescribed, it means by regulations made by the minister in terms of the clause 18-19. However, the last bullet is very important to note. It says that the minister must prescribe minimum normative standards promoting values and principles referred to in section 1 and F1 of the Constitution in consultation with the relevant executive authority. This would allow a degree of uniformity in relation to norms and standards across the public administration, which would have a positive impact on service delivery. And the reason why specifically the minister is required to consult with the relevant executive authority when making regulations or prescribing the minimum norms and standards in relation to section 195 is simply because what you find in those norms and principles, you can locate them different functional areas or portfolios of different ministers. And it makes sense that when minimum norms and standards are set in relation to those values, it makes better sense that the minister, at the very least, consults with the relevant executive authority, who is responsible for that particular functional area of the body. And then clause 17 deals with the Office of Standards and Compliance, and the bill establishes within the public administration an Office of Standards and Compliance, whose objects are to promote and monitor compliance with the minimum norms and standards that would have been set by the minister in terms of Clause 16, by also taking into account that the three spheres of government
are the sources, interdependent interrelated. And this again touches to the issue of the constitutionality of the bill. And you see that throughout, every effort made to ensure that we maintain and recognize the distinctiveness, the interdependentness, and the interrelatedness of the three spheres of government. And then clause 18 gives the minister the power to make regulations on, amongst others, matters required or permitted by the bill to describe. And then the minister must, when making these regulations, in so far as they apply to municipalities, the minister must do that in consultation with the minister responsible for local government, the minister responsible for finance, as well as organized local government. And then when the minister makes promulgating the regulations, the minister is required to publish the proposed regulation for public comment for a period of not less than 30 days in the government. And then, just by way of a preface, when the third bill was published on the 31st May, 2013, when you go to the schedule that deals with the repeal and amendment of laws, you would have found that the third bill, as it was then, or as it then was, it basically repealed the Public Safety Act as a whole. But what the third bill now does, it only repeals section 4, which deals with capacity development and then the school of government, 14, which deals with transfer, and 15, which deals with settlement. But it also repeals in whole or in total transfer of staff in the Public Safety Act of 1998. And I'm not sure whether I should deal with this slide or I should first deal with how it then to be commented. Just in brief.
I think that we better allow the chair to indicate now. I think that the saturation point of numbers should not be overlooked, and perhaps allow them now for our session. We will still come back to the conclusion to indicate what we've had to give. 99 pages. And this is a consensus of enormous magnitude. Not even the Codessa agreement. Arrived at the kind of consensus that we have come to arrive at, and bend over backwards the way that we have bent over backwards. But we will come to this point when questions are asked.
I'm not sure what I am asked at the moment. Okay, honourable members, this is the interaction between agencies now of the 10 bills, which has been presented quite quickly, given all the details, starting with the first one. I would already like to thank the presentation and ask the members to then raise their heads so that they can question the age. I can understand the quite a lot of things that you can be given. So I will take the last thing that's coming forward, Honorable Detroit, followed by Honorable Manon, Honorable Niagara, Honorable William. In that order, I will then have the paper, Honorable Monica, starting with Honorable Detroit.
Thank you, Jefferson. I think it's not a right day to go into details, too much details. I mean, we're going to work through this bill on sections that need to be improved or scrapped or whatever, you know. I do pick up, usually in these kind of legislations, that there's the use of words is important. Now, we have the word here in consultation, but sometimes it should be in concurrence with, you must not curb with somebody. You know, that kind of difference. There are these words that will come into play later on. The real problem with municipalities, I believe, is not necessarily the officials, but it's the problem is with the civil oversight and leadership. Because the councillors are just not always, not enough of them are there to fill the council committees, public accounts committees. They don't have the skills and the problem sometimes even with your oversight bodies like audit committees, independent audit committees. Okay. Just that being said, But okay, I'm not going to go into detail. I'm just going to make a few comments here. I had a few statements here today. At one point, I thought I was sitting in a concord, a constitutional court. You know, judges are delivering their verdict. But with respect to Advocate Somalani, you're not a judge. And some of the interpretations that you had here, I was worried about. It is clear that the constitutionality of certain sections are bothering a lot of people. Other people that spoke here as well. But I get the impression that we're taking a 10-pound hammer, that's 5 kilos for those who don't know, and trying to beat a plowshare into a Swiss watch. The way we interpret some of these things. The other thing is that we did speak about values. You know, one thing that came through for many, many years ago, and you know, it's still true. I was sitting in a political science class in the 70s, and the lecturer asked the guy, he said, speak to us about values. You've heard about values now in politics now. Just tell us, what do you think? You know what the guy said? He said, I've got values, but if you don't like them, I've got others. It's the only thing I remember from those days that really came true. Okay? So we talk about the values interpreted in the Constitution, but it's such a grey area. Now, there are some of the things here that really would benefit. Some of the sections here would really would benefit. We can change some of the words and so forth. But the biggest concern is still that although it's cloaked in something else, the real purpose of certain sections seems to be to control municipalities from central government. Now, I just want to give a practical example. If I'm the mayor of Cape Town, if I were the mayor of Cape Town, and I have certain problems with employees and the things not being happening, and the council takes decisions, and the policies are not being carried out, etc., etc. Now, I want to enforce this. How do I do it? I'm not in control of the staff. We're not in control. The council is out of control. So if the minister, not this minister, I don't think she will do a nasty thing like that, but if a future minister would decide, look, I'm going to send Cape Town all the bad guys, and I'm going to pull from Cape Town all the good guys, and I'm going to put them somewhere else. This is what says they can do it. It can be done. If this year, I wrote here, this section I wrote here, where is it now? Section 6, 4B. If an employee is seconded in terms of subsection 1, and unless the employee consents, and so on. We talk about the idea of demotion by consent. You can't really demote a guy, you must just consent to it. No? It's paid. Okay, so this whole long chapter of 3 of individual transfers and secondments, I can tell you, is going to be a nightmare. We have here, rather short, the basic values, or rather short, is conducting business with the state, like this. We've got disclosures of financial interest, like this. But we've got employment, individual transfers and secondments, like this. You know, what is the real purpose here? Minister, we can really work with some of the stuff here, but I think there's going to be a problem if the state, central government, is going to encroach on the municipality here. You cannot have a situation, and I've been in local government 9 years, you can't have a situation where a duly elected government is being hamstrung by the administration. And I've seen it happening, and it's even happening now, where the administration has become its own animal that feeds on itself and works for itself, and councillors are not skilled enough to deal with that problem. That's a prospect, a broad view of it. Thank you.
Thank you, Future Mayor of Cape Town. Honorable Lutai. Because there's a critical question that needs us to focus, right? Is it possible for us to just go through the consulates on the move or just ask another one?
Thank you, Chief. First, here is just a few, if I can call it, administrative questions. The first one is, was this bill tagged as a 76 bill? Just want to have confirmation of that. This is clearly a 76 bill. Then secondly, I see that you're quite, Minister has alluded to that, that the bill is quite different from the draft that we've seen. Some of the things that I don't see here is the Anti-Corruption Bureau. I think that was the child of Advocate Simulani, that we don't see here anymore. And it seems like it's been replaced by this EPIC unit, where I still don't see any powers in terms of consequences for non-compliance. So I'm not quite sure what they'll do other than just pointing up and say, hey, this guy's been bad, I'm going to tell the principal about you, and that's it. So I'm not quite sure what the purpose of that unit is, because I've got no punitive powers to have consequences. Then the School of Government, I'm just a bit confused. It has been introduced by the Minister. By the point of this bill, it seems like it's going to be the responsibility of the Minister of Higher Education, because it's going to be instituted in terms of that act. Because it says here that in terms of that act, I think we need more clarification. Where will the School of Government be, within the Public Service, Department of Public Service Administration, or within Higher Education, and where will the funding come from? Because I'm quite sure, Minister, in the short time that you said that I attended that workshop, one of the things that the Auditor General also concurred with me is that we need to know where the money is going to come from. We know that in this medium-term budget, it didn't come from there, so somewhere it must be provided for and appropriated for in the future. The other thing is, I've read the definition of institution, and in some way, you make reference to the head of the institution. Now, who is this head of the institution that must work with the Office of Compliance? So in other words, there's not a whether you may or not, you must work. So who is that head of the institution? Which links to maybe some of the things that my colleague has said about powers and functions. Minister, then the other thing, there's been, in terms of constitutional, that it's been referred to 151 of the Constitution, but the one thing that has never been mentioned and that can compromise the Constitution is 151(4) of the Constitution, where it says the national or provincial government may not compromise or impede a municipality's ability or right to exercise its powers or functions or performs its functions. Now, that specific one has never been mentioned in any of the deliberations, and neither today. Now, it seems like in the Act there's a lot of powers that the Minister will get from regulations. And there's quite a number of times where it is kind of obligatory. Not like the Constitution says that national legislation must ensure the promotion, because the promotion is not the implementation and the control of the values and principles, but the promotion of that. And one gets the impression that this bill seeks more than just the promotion, but also the control, the implementation, you know, the actions if you don't comply. So those are some of the really concerns that I have myself. If I can just refer quickly to the bill that page 3, where it says starts therefore this Act seeks to give effect to, and bearing in mind that the second last bullet, it says section 164 of the Constitution provides that any matter concerning local government not dealt with in the Constitution may be prescribed by national legislation or by provincial legislation within the framework of the national legislation, etc. Now,
obviously that was done with some of these things about local government that is not dealt with in the constitution. Can you give us indication of what that might implicate and on which section or issues pertaining local government and the constitution that you need to legislate that is not already in the constitution or in other forms of legislation? Then I think for the moment, just my last point is within individual transfers in the continent, I think I must see those two as one, because it can be seconded also not for a short period of time, but for quite a long time as well. So in effect, eventually it becomes a transfer per se. So those two sections most certainly infringes, in my opinion, or possibly infringes on the rights of local government and even province to a certain extent. There's very few mentions being made of the role of the NEC, which is its task to make sure that all these values that you mention in the constitution are adhered to in that specific province. So I'm not quite sure why we need more legislation to do it from national, whereas we have got an NEC and we have got certain provincial controllables for that NEC to do his or her work to make sure that whatever the values of the constitution is, they will ensure that will happen. So I'm not quite sure why we leave them out in because it's, I think I've only once heard the word NEC here this morning. So it seems like the role of the NEC is to a certain extent watered down. This is maybe very short notice in terms of this, but I think there is quite a number of things that we have to work through and get maybe legal clarity as we go along. Thank you very much, Mr.
Okay, can we allow the minister to respond to the unless it is also a part of what has been asked. Honourable Megan? Yeah. So we are going.
Thank you. Listen, I have no idea why it is only that Honourable Ray and Honourable Joy have not learned the word compliment you just in their upbringing. You know, the first thing that I try to say is it is such a much improved world from the last one. I mean, something elementary like that. You think it's part of the value system that...
No, but you already said it.
Oh.
I can't just repeat what you said.
You can say I'm performing.
Well, but I do it very subtly.
Chairperson, if you allow us, what we wanted to do was now... It is the spirit and the essence of the verse. We are hoping that at another time we will deal with the clause by clause, those issues of the definition in concurrence and conjunction will be now we'll be dealing with the clause by clause. Finally, the bill belongs to Parliament now. So we will be led by you in all of those matters. What we are bringing to you is what we have worked on and what we are now handing over to you. And we would like at the moment, if it is possible, to deal with the umbrella issue of concerned members. Honourable Dutoy says that he is concerned that there is an attempt to control municipalities. Actually, to the contrary, we are very concerned about the lack of skills in municipalities. Those are areas that are closest to our people. Those are areas tied to the responsibility of delivery. Those are areas that do not have the capacity to do what they are required to do. In the NDP, there is a very clear recommendation that issues such as the building, transport and the building of roads and houses should be delegated to municipalities. I can tell you that if you look at the record of human settlements over the last 5 years, the biggest problem is that was done without due consideration to whether or not municipalities have the necessary technical knowledge to do what needs to be done. Because when you're building a house, when you're building a road, you need all the technical experience that does not reside in local government. We would like to be able to make sure that as we transfer responsibility, we transfer the potential, we look after the responsibility, and make sure that the municipalities are able to deliver. When you look at the Auditor General's report, his biggest concern is the people in municipalities that are there to do the work that is the mandate of municipalities. Our intent is to say, having siphoned off the best that we have in the country for national and provincial, it is my responsibility to make sure that we don't have such huge inequalities. What we have in certain power should be taken back to municipalities so we can enhance the capacity of municipalities to do what government requires. So it is not the control of municipalities at all. It is in our interaction with Mantu, which is a representative of
one of the unions.
Yes. They were extremely supportive. They had their concerns around transfer. And the why transfer is dealt with in such a case, because it deals with the person. Not just a concept out there, it's not a relation, it deals with the individual. So they were very concerned that that which affects them individually must be spelled out in legislation so that we can protect them. That's why it is longer than any of the other issues. The engagement we had with Imatu was of we learned a lot from what the problems are and how they would benefit. And what we did at the end of the meeting was to throw in a free picture with the deputy minister, which they then posted on their website, because we actually benefited a lot from these processes that we had. But no, our intention is not to control municipalities, it is to empower municipalities. We cannot continue to have in one country, a unitary state, the poorest of the poor in some poor countries with a very low base of revenue, with no work, no skills, nothing to attract them there, leaving those people there absolutely unattended to, while you and I live in the first city of Cape Town. It's just unacceptable 30 years ago. Something must give. And that which has to give has to be driven by the state, and this is what we're trying to do in this place. And we would not have the authority to send the bad guys to Cape Town. They are there already.
Oh, that's the reason why they're so...
They're nice enough because... the idea is that the transfers would be mutual. It would be a request from the receiving. We are not imposing. It would be a request from the receiving entity, and we would make sure that wherever we can find the best that is suitable for that vote, we will be able to release from measure. So there is no imposition whatsoever in that particular case. As indicated, UCY transfers touches on the human being. Most of the negotiations and discussions we had were about what happens to me? Do I get a cost of the transfer? What happens to my child? What happens if I don't want it? So we had to make sure that there is some comfort zone in this transfer and mobility of staff, because if we are to benefit maximally, all of us here in one country with equal capacity and equal access to resources, we've got to ensure that we have this mobility. Values. Which values are we talking about? The values we're talking about are in the Constitution. And the preamble states very clearly what these values are. And the reason why we were so strong on values in the Constitution is because we wanted to create a different South Africa. In South Africa, very different from South Africa that we found here. South Africa based on fairness. South Africa based on, I could go on, those values are, the Constitution is important. When we say we want to instill those values, this is something that we still have to work on in the school of government. How do you instill values? How do you instill ethics? How do you instill any of these two things? But we've got a number of people who are teaching at the institution. It will be their responsibility to teach them. These values will be the values as put out in the Constitution. Values of ensuring that there is equality in the sector. Values of ensuring that there is transparency in government. Values, you can go through the Constitution, you'll find those for these values there. And I think that we as South Africans are beginning to craft our own values around what it is that we want out of the government, what it is that we want out of the individual and the sector. civil oversight, you think that that is the most important problem that we have. Actually, yes, that is one of the problems that we have. And the Auditor General did indicate that in the process there with the Minister of Quota, that they are in the process of putting together all the committees in the municipalities because they're in such a lack of it. But that is because the cream of everything that South Africa has run to the national and run to provision, which is why we left the provinces for the minister to come to where we are. Our job is now to make the local government attractive as well. We're trying to turn the wheel around and make sure that we have the councillors who have the skills, these councillors who are educated, these councillors who are now required to go through the school of government and be trained on what is required of them to manage the system of government that we have. You know, the MDP gives an example of what goes wrong when you don't have technical skills in municipality. You know the case of what happened in the Eastern Cape when the dam was poisoned because I think right fell into the dam. And the hospital
must have been a small dam and a big rat.
whatever it is. But it is discovered after a very long time that that particular area, had no technician to accompany there. Because the technician would have been taken over by somebody else or gone to another place that would probably more attractive to them than Alamo. Only when we had these infants dying did we trace to them and trace it back to the water. We can't continually have these losses. Minister Manuel, he talked with, was giving a talk to our team of senior managers, that there they were trying to deal with the department, local government, which was wanting to take ownership of an initiative that came from basic education, that every teacher should have a laptop. So Minister Manuel said that they in Treasury were asking, give us a business plan. And they gave them 40 copies before they actually understood what a business plan. They begin, you know, documentation. They didn't understand what a business plan is to be able for Treasury to allocate those resources. Those are basic things that we actually do need. We have them in abundance in South Africa. Let's give them to the local government here. That's where our people are, that's where the third world still is in our country.
Comrade
Murray.
Yes, Comrade Murray.
The input that we got from Murray, which we all got, this is, you know, he says at the end of listening to us going through this and taking in, he said, you know, when we're dealing with corruption, if you were to actually indicate to society what we will be saving government by having this anti-corruption entity, then we will have won not only government but society, treasury as well, because you will say this is what we're saving you, and they will be able to give us the necessary money to establish that. We don't have the necessary money to establish that. What we have is an entity in the public service, which is called CISACU, you know about it, with a budget of 6 million, you know that you're going on about that matter. What we need to do now in the implementation plan is to actually follow what you suggested. Indicate what has been lost through corruption by the government and make sure that we can actually get our fair share of what is required. There is no allocation in the MDF. That is also in relation to the school of government. But what we have done with the school of government is use the money, the losses that we have for Kalama. And we have used the money, the additional money that is required from the school, from the resources that we have within the stable of public administration. And we've gone to borrow money from CETA with the permission of Treasury so that we can top up money that we have from CETA to enable the school of government to be able to come. Otherwise, we found that by the time we finish this bill, the resources of state had already been expended. The bill is going to be on an incremental basis, dependent also on the availability of it. What we're putting here is framework, but it will be a progressive realization of some of the clauses that are in the bill. The anti-corruption, yes, the bill is 1076. The anti-corruption effort into in the bill, but it's not just corruption we're dealing with. We're dealing with other things. And part of the ethic and integrity, we have corruption. And if we don't zero in on corruption, we're not dealing with a whole lot of other things that are wrong with the public service. We have a comfort in calling it ethics and integrity in the bill. But the nitty-gritty, we will be here throughout the weekend on the November. Friday, Saturday, Sunday morning, Sunday evening, should there be any questions around the clause themselves, and to clarify whether it's a concurrent or after concurrent, why we don't have MEC, why we are taking the executive authority, because what we're doing is actually using what we have in the public administration itself. We deal with MEC, and they're not mentioned in the public service. But because they are part of federal government, we deal with that fear of government, recognizing that he's independent, and we deal with it in the Premier. And the Premier has full reign over him or her MD.
So, let's proceed to Honorable Nyakembe, who will be followed by Honorable William. Then Honorable Yamataka.
Thank you very much,
I think it is the first member of parliament to welcome the presentation. Also to say 11 years. Now, the bill that seeks to say his fears of government is opposite each other in a practical way. I think it's listening to the historical background of the bill in your presentation from 2002, now it's 2013, that means 11 years. So now we are grappling now with this bill, which initially it was 161 pages, now it's 17 pages. Now, from where I'm sitting, I think for it to be 161 before, there were issues that have to do with the Constitution, which were not necessarily supposed to be part of the bill. For it now to be reduced from 161 up to 17, it means that due the process of consultations and discussions with stakeholders, those areas will be easily be identified and taken out of the initial bill. I think we need to applaud the department in dealing with that. That's the first point. I'm not always asked questions because I don't like to ask questions. Because sometimes questions are not taking you anywhere, because you ask on something that has been presented, but those who want to ask, they are fine, they can ask questions.
Thank you very much.
Because they are worried that now there will be transcribers and settlement. Because the comment on transfers to me has got nothing to do with demotion. Because once you demote someone, that becomes an unfair labor practice, and that person can challenge that. In terms of the Labor Relations Act, if you demote someone, that person can challenge that as an unfair labor practice. And a transfer of an employee from one particular job to another is a transfer. And the Labor Relations Act captures Section 187 when it talks to a transfer of the contract of the employment. You can't transfer someone to a job which conditions are lesser than what it is at that particular time. But the consent is to make sure that how then this transfer will affect the person, how those areas can be dealt with. I think it's important to some of the areas within the bill, they are captured in more detail in other legislation that exists. I think That came as a result of that multi-discipline committee, which was established, including other departments, your department of labor, in order to look at when you deal with transfer, you must not deal with it to an extent where it will upset the conditions of employment of that particular person in I think those are some of the good things. The last point for you, the regulations. Why in the bill there's a clause or a section? No, I'm verifying you. There's a clause that deals with regulations. I think it's because in the legislation you cannot have everything being reflecting on that particular legislation. There are things that are need to be done in the process after the legislation is there. It's like the Constitution. The legislation comes in a way is a product of what the Constitution was. Now, you have a legislation which sometimes becomes a detail of what the Constitution wants. And then you have the regulations now of implementing that legislation that you put in there. So I think these are matters, in my view, Chairperson, that in debating, because the questions that have been asked earlier, maybe the ones that are going to follow, in a way, they are debating each and every clause that is in the bill. So if then the questions have that intention, for me, we rather go to discuss the bill clause by clause, rather than ask it, because if we ask questions now, which are used in a way, we don't have time. But I'm not sure about the Friday, Saturday, Sunday that the minister spoke about. That this is a voter registration weekend. If now the minister wants us here, how would we mobilize people to embody
Well, obviously, honourable members, I do have a proposal for the members, so I sort of put it at the end in terms of whom am I going up to. And maybe if you allow me, it's honourable Ray and Nyagame. Others I'll take them later. Okay, we proceed then to honourable William.
Thank you, Chairperson. Honourable Nyagame was the first Member of Parliament to welcome the presentation. I'd like to be the first Member of Parliament to welcome the bill. In the past, those of you that know me in this committee, I've had many questions about service delivery in the public service through the years that I've been in Parliament, and I just want to say that this is about time this has happened, and it's very good. I'm very pleased that this bill is before us now. Because fundamentally all service delivery, all politics is about service delivery, and we mustn't forget that trying to protect our small little enclaves is a bit problematic when people are suffering on the ground. Just a thing about transfers and the secondment and the worry that it's going to be a way in which national government can interfere with local government. On page 7 on line 1, line 25 says, as agreed between the executive authority of the transferring and recipient institutions. And I think that covers the whole thing. If there's no agreement, then nobody can get moved. So I think that's quite good. Also, I think that the intent of the bill, from what I can read, is to improve service delivery in local government, which is vital, because fundamentally that is where it all happens. You know, service delivery protests against national or provincial government are very unusual, and generally speaking, service delivery protests happen against local government. So when it comes to transferring people without their consent, I don't think it's the intent of the legislation to transfer unhappy people. Because if you transfer somebody without their consent, and they're unhappy, and the job is now to go to, say, to Palestine municipality in Mpumalanga, and try and assist them there, and they're not happy, The job that you want them to do won't happen because they'll be unhappy and they won't be keen on that. So I just want to say that I think this is fantastic legislation and I propose that we accept it as it is.
Thank you.
In your dream.
I'm just proceeding. Lastly, I have Honorable Ramasaka.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. With all the comments, let me say that it's good to see the Minister and the Deputy Minister supporting each other in this presentation. In other committees, you don't find them, you don't find ministers, they hardly come. So it's always good to compliment, where compliment is required. Secondly, Minister, it's just one question I want to ask in this relation to the presentation. It's very important for professionalizing public service. I think we all support that. I think it's very important that there is capacity at all levels of state, and it's also important that you don't have officials resigning from one state to join another state, also because conditions are not the same. The spread condition as Cape Town municipalities and as maybe provincial government. So the whole thing about organizations and addressing and professionalizing is very important. I think we will support that. I have this question. I didn't hear it presented in the, maybe we'll find it in the bill. There is an issue about the prohibition in terms of business. But nothing is said about what is referred to as a cooling off period. I didn't see it in the, I didn't hear it. I was trying to page through the slide to find whether there is something called the cool off period. Because it's well and good to say the people that are dealing with this stuff is closed, but it's also another issue when you're talking about the call it maybe a director general in the critical department and resigning to take a position outside of which is a private sector, but which has almost like a linkage with what is happening in government with that kind of information. So I don't know, maybe when we do the view we'll find that, but I just want to ask you, what's your view if it continues to be in terms of the whole thing about the cooling of period, which is stipulated for a particular time. And the second one, I think you have spoke to that. In relation to applicability of the bill, it's applicable to all spheres of government. There is things that continue to trouble. When we talk about management of public service and administration, it's a fairly broad issue. I just want to find out whether this issue is addressed in it. There's a current problem that your department is facing, particularly when it comes to appointment of the personnel in the various departments. Not now dealing with the scheme, but bloating of the personnel as a result of non-adherence to the prescript. Now, I want to understand whether, and there is always the issue that the act as it exists doesn't quite empower the DEFSA enough to declare what has been done which is illegal, which does not have approval from the public service supernumerary, which then means that something else must happen. So I want to understand in terms of this act, given the fact that it's applicable to three spheres of government, do you think that it will address slightly that issue, which is a vexing question, or it is still going to require the consideration on other acts in terms of that particular issue of the non-adherence to various departments? So those are just for me two questions that I want to pose.
I think they have voted, and I'm sure myself will
Honourable Nyakembe, the bill has indeed been reduced to 17 pages because when we did find contestation, we actually resorted to withdrawing. Especially because most of the issues that have been contested already exist in the Public Service Act. It came to our attention that most citizens and most people don't know the Public Service Act. And for some reason, and they would respond without realizing that in fact people really have the power to the things that they are looking to find from that. But it was an attempt to make sure that this fundamental bill doubles. It's an urgent bill, 11 years is too much for anybody who is waiting for citizens to be delivered to their doorstep. And therefore we wanted to make sure that we can cross-check it as much as possible, then we consider the error which we can. One of the areas that was a very early concession from us was a letter from the Premier of the Western Cape. Because of agreeing with the bill and the necessity of the bill, and then saying, but these matters I will not proceed on. Tutong Center, the CGW, and so on. That's when my deputy minister, through a tantrum, walked out. Did you go to the UK? Because that is my domain, the two soul centers and the CGW. So we said, look, it's okay, let's allow to do that because they already exist in the Public Service Act. At the time when she's back now, she will have coffee with Madam Kennedy to explain why it is necessary to have them all in centrally located just for the purpose of having of ensuring that they are given direction. But of course they reside in the Premier's office, which is why she was so concerned. So those things are things that we could easily work on throughout. And what we have now are the bare bones of what needs to be done. Honourable Williams, I agree. I think that this bill should be adopted as is. As I indicated, I concur with all the sentiments around the bill, and I'm extremely proud of all the efforts that have been put in by government. This was one way, the most collaborative way in which government came together and produced this bill. So we all take ownership of the bill. On the issue that is dealt with by Honourable Dr. Khan before she was talking about transfers and appointments. The Deputy Minister will respond to that because she was the HOG cabinet, so she's very familiar with that issue and she'll be able to explain what she thinks we need to do in order to make sure that we don't get that confusion that you're talking about. The cooling off period did exist in the country, but as we got, as she came into constitutional terrain, I think the cooling period had initially been suggested as 1 year. We got into constitutional terrain, we can live with that because we can actually work towards raising the consciousness of people about what is right. But we're not going to do the bill over people who are unable to understand the issues they're likely to do. But we also created another avenue. There's a school of government. Any DG whose office will be required to go and spend a day at the school of government. That would be enough cooling off for them. So that they can give back to society and be able to impart. We have very little resources. So if we can use the resources that we have, it would be good. I want to announce at this point that Kamal Mansura will be running a faculty or faculty, whatever, at the School of Government. Am I correct?
Yes.
I can see that. I do always tread on people's toes like that. Because we have such rich resources in our country. All we need to do is manage them. And we can give back, and we will have the product we will have out of our public service in tremendous. So we are targeting all of those people who have special expertise to come and teach at the university. Bloated structures, I think that we established the Office of Normal and Standards precisely to deal with that problem. When we sent the Office of Normal and Standards to Limpopo, they are the ones who came back and reflect the workforce of Limpopo into how the one can teach. Yes, and they were able to move 30,000. So they have the power to take the necessary steps when, in fact, there is abuse of the state crisis. Thank you, Minister, on the issue of the employment by one public
Thank you, Minister. I think part of what the transgender economist, Honorable Thomas Akalan, would cure is the bloating of the rationalizing and bringing people that are in certain areas where the structure is bloated and there's a shortage in the area. And we are a unified state with one government, no federal state. So as a result of that, I just thought it would be prudent that we could deal with it from ensuring that the crafting of adverts stipulates that you are employed by government staff and not by the housing government policy of the council, so that it makes for easier transparent accounting in areas where, as the minister has spoken about, what is enshrined in some of the issues that you have discussed, that are not the we're able to deal with those matters.
Okay. I'll need to just do some few comments, but before it's too late, I just need to be clear on two areas. Obviously, Minister Mbushu will also face to do a conclusion, which also from our side will outline what is our intention in terms of taking this up. But just a minor two issues that I need to get from the presentation. The issue of human capacity versus the human dignity was came out in such a time. And then there's also, I'd just like us to just talk about the open education as outlined in chapter 10. You know, our understanding is sort of question. I know it's a measure that we've been engaging with and with some time. Don't in a particular way because we do want to overcome, but it's one matter to be engaging again with the public information. Therefore, I have to really talk about particularly in relation to the hospital. Several matters before the proceeding with the comments from our side.
I'm not trying to understand the question around human dignity and human capacity. Maybe you can rephrase, but if I can start to reference to what the only constitution says is that the values and principles in section 195 of the constitution do not only bind public administration, they equally apply to other organs of state. That's why I mentioned judiciary specifically, and also the public enterprise, they also apply there. So that has already
Can I answer that on Advocate Malandu? I'm using the advantage of your presence and all of the issues on the Constitution in terms of. Sometimes when we talk of the organs of state, it has to exclude the court. Do you agree with that? So maybe let's talk about it some other time. I'm just throwing it in for a discussion. But I know that, for example, when the committee wants to oversight, they are not excluding, of course. When we went for oversight, we had an issue about how some of the issues of court and how they handle things, and we did do the oversight on court, but we know that it's a contested concept in terms of when we talk of the organs of the state. There are some clauses in the Constitution, I believe, which exclude the court, and maybe we need to talk about that. Let's leave it for now, and maybe we'll refer to it for some other ones. Running legal has to always have with even public civic community. And our role of oversight, but it does not necessarily imply to the future, but it's impacting success on the Constitution. So let's talk about it some other time. We do go to court for oversight, but we suspect that we are encroaching Constitution. But there is a committee that deals with that. To a particular extent, it does deal with court work. On the one that talks about the, when we referring to Section 10, if my not refers to it, you were talking largely about the human capacity and it refers to the rule of government. Not a major issue, but the human resource largely is. Is Section 10 more on human dignity or is it human capacity?
Human capacity development. I mean, Section 10 of the talks about capacity development by institutions and the institutions being the department. Fine. All it says is that within the, what it means is within departments there must be development of human capacity in the way that every thing must be done. And then the follow through with the School of Government indicates that that human capacity development will take place in the School of Government in the manner that it's also prescribed. It's not taking a different stage.
Okay, no, that's fine. In dealing with public administration, we did get to the point that you're concerned now. And we're hoping that we can develop in time to have those sections of the bill that deal with the cost, which is all over the state. Right now, we're dealing with 2A, which is public administration as we know it now. But public administration are all those people who work for government are paid by the public service. In time, with consultation with the Minister of Justice, we will have a section that deals with the court and all the other state organs of state. So in consultation with the Minister of Public Enterprises, we will have a section that deals with public enterprises so that they all comply with the regulations and requirements as will be set out by the relevant minister, but conforming to public administration. I was indicating to my team, and the legislature.
on the presentation, the Public Service Commission, there's also a reference to the Public Service Commission identified priority area, which therefore talks to the synergy, you know how everything flows together, the synergy in terms of all matters that we in place as a community. We have an example when we do oversight, we did call the DGs to somebody else, there's a lot of things that are not done. And the Public Service Commission did a presentation that highlighted very clearly that we had covered time as a community. These other communities in the province, we investigated all those things that are not happening well, and we realized, yes, the administration is in progress. Like it's coming to the presentation. You know, there are some things that are really not happening well. And that's why we appreciate that. Now, once it is set up all this, we're moving towards addressing the issues that have been consistently raised. So it's one of the other things that, possibly on our list has been moving forward, we would leave it to the committee that will come before, but indicate that we went up to the staff, and at the end, this is the bill that came forward, despite the fact that they were looking at and identified or the way that was put before us to address that. Along with also, there was the issue of the auditor general, the concerns that are in, though ministers sometimes. I also had an argument with the auditor general on the issue of, how you implement the Section 100 Department, and I don't really think that's auditor general, but it was in a lot of programs we were trying to do that. Well, of course, we're growing in terms of, in future, but we're in the big level as auditors. The thing is that it is not captured sufficiently in terms of how you deal with the administration governance, including the international work of the department. If you think in terms of the audit doesn't come, quite well in the work that it is concerned. Possibly it's also on the reporting side from the department, but also because we observe what they do call the oversight from time, there's a lot of work that is happening in those areas. And therefore, moving forward, those are some of the things. But the fact that you engage with the auditor general in terms of moving processes, we got critique, that's also part of the synergy. Well, Minister, I'm talking about Section 100. I know that there is quite a work that you still have to do around Section 100. Yes, it doesn't relate to that issue, quite clearly, but it's a work that you also need to do. Also, there is the national service quota and the development involved. Part of the leadership that the leadership report is actually seen in terms of moving forward on that. We are aware of that, and we still know that some work that needs to be done is there, because I can see now department is really doing very much to close the whole other gaps that had been identified. And with the knowledge and the background of what that has been done, it's easier than we've experienced in terms of the implementation. And what also we're impressed about is that now the little the NDP, it also encompasses on its areas of building a developmental state. That's a part of that, the practical implementation. And the critique that has been raised in NDP, as the minister, as the department, now it's being taken on board. There is the issue of the constitution. I've already alluded to it, because now we are developing, the department is already developing Section 10, and that must be complemented. But of course, the state-owned entities, once we do oversight, they take on board. We still have a lot of discussion around the office of state, as we said. There was the parastatal, you still need to understand how to approach them, how to meet them. Given the independent institutions, those that are employed inside, we still have to come to those discussions as public and administration. But lastly, in conclusion, to all these matters, it's now the new definition that we are entering into that talks about the public administration. We are really defining it, including the local government. That's the biggest movement by the committee. I sincerely thought this is going to be one of the most difficult committee meetings, but I must say that from all members of the committee, it was one of the flowing, well-flowing meetings. I appreciate the question that came forward, and I appreciate also the comments and the movement that's going to go forward. I really believe that we do also, as people are deployed to do oversight, whether from CA or wherever, we do also marketing candidacy, and that is one of the issues that we really look into it to see if give support to where it's to the department, but this work that really intend that it should happen. And really want to thank the department and the honorable members and everyone else, the minister, and all the work that is to be done. Can I just allow you to enter to your conclusion and minister, but I feel that these members were watching for their son today.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I would like to thank everybody here, especially members of Parliament. It's quite clear that they have tied their minds to the bill and the questions that they have posed. We will soon come back to them and ensure that there is clarity on any areas that we are still concerned about. We are hoping for more engagement. We will not pick up Professor Nkembo weekend. But we would like to clarify this. Member of Parliament, we are extremely grateful that you gave us the honor and the opportunity to create the legacy for this forefront and actually redefine public administration. It could not have been without you. We ask you that we prioritize this, put it to a close, so that by the time we go up there, we are able to say that we came, we found this problem, and we solved it. And this is the bill that solves it. My request is, thank you so much,
Chair. Thank you, everyone. Just to indicate to members that we're planning to have another meeting between tomorrow and Friday, and therefore we're still communicating with the committee, such as they will respond quite quickly. We will send messages because we want the department to be alive as might call them any other day. Because Friday we already had a sitting, but ahead of course, yesterday, whole day. We might be exempted from the sitting to deal with the matter, but we might be, if not, then we will begin at another time. But at the same time, we still have tomorrow, we might be the afternoon for exemptions as well, to boost the fact that we are closed by God. And I'd really like to appreciate everyone who's here. Thank you very much, we can attend the meeting.
Can die boek wel maar een dag nog doen? Huh? Nee, dat is niet werkt. Dat is niet werkt. Nu, het is wel even een daar van komt.